copy your CDs without going to jail, Microsoft still can't make a secure operating system, and Apple malware gets in the game? All that and more on the Slongcast. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Slongcast, episode 35 for Tuesday, May 24th, 2011. As always, I'm your host, Kevin Slonka, and we have a new guest for you this week. With me in the studio, Mr. Mike Link.
What?
What's going on, Mike?
Not too much. How's everyone doing?
Everyone being me, I'm wonderful.
I was talking to the listeners.
Oh, the listeners. I need some way for them to be able to talk back
live.
I need to start finding out how to stream this thing live.
That would be cool.
That would be cool. Take, you know, live viewer questions, but yeah, alas, that requires more equipment and more money out of my pocket.
Yeah.
So tell everybody a little bit about yourself. Who are you?
I'm Mike Link. I work for Siemens. I get to work from home, so I don't actually have to, like I was just telling Kevin, I can have no pants Fridays. The only problem with that is I'm the only one with no pants on, so...
But at least you don't get fired for No Pants Fridays.
This is very true.
Pretty sure I would.
Yeah.
Even though there's only three people that sit around me, I don't think they would appreciate No Pants Fridays.
It's kind of frowned upon most places. So
So let's jump right in. We actually have a lot of stories to talk about this week. A lot of things happening. The first one is something that is very interesting. Now, I must say this is a UK article, so it could be slightly different depending on where you live. But according to the Daily Mail in the United Kingdom, you know that that law that says you're not allowed to copy CDs and rip CDs, even though you're only putting it on your own iPod? Well, that's set to be scrapped. What are your opinions on this? I think this is amazing.
Yes. I think in reading it, my first thought was, this is still a law?
Right.
It's about time, is all I really have to say, because you buy it and you own the physical media. You have it, but you're... I guess the old interpretation is law is you own it, but you're only leasing the information on it.
Yeah.
Which is terrible.
That's total crap.
Yeah.
It's not that way with anything else.
No.
Like, you buy a DVD player, that DVD player is yours.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the DVD...
The DVD itself.
Yeah.
That's actually the same... Yeah, the same law. How long have iPods and music players been out? I mean, it's been a while, right?
It's been a long time. Even to think back farther, did it have to do with if you made like a mixtape? Say I had a bunch of CDs.
Oh, a mixtape.
You know, I read it and was like, oh, all those mixtapes that I made for my high school girlfriends, that was all illegal. I was breaking the law there, so.
FBI, please do not come raid my house.
Oh, yeah. That's...
Yeah, mixed CDs, mixed tapes, you know, cassette tapes. I mean, people even did that with vinyl records.
Yeah.
Those who were, you know, rich enough to have record writers, I guess.
Yeah, I think the big thing, it kicked in with cassette tapes. And it's to the point now that I think we're reaching, the CDs are finally becoming cassette tapes. Whereas,
right.
Because it comes out every time this new media comes out. You know, it was a big stink from the record companies when cassette tapes came on.
Right, how easy it is.
Yeah, you can record right from the radio. And then CDs were the same thing. And I think finally it's just they're letting, I don't want to say letting bygones be bygones, but they know people are doing it, so.
Yeah, I think, I'm pretty sure that, you know, even if this law does get scrapped, there's probably still going to be some sort of law that allows them to go after people who are, you know, copying and reselling.
Yeah.
But at least they're not going to be going after the average person just for storing their music on their hard drive.
Right. And I don't think it was a huge deal before, because like I made some liner notes on this, and my first thought was, this is still a law. Like it's not something that I think is, you know, getting that CD and ripping it to iTunes isn't, you're not going to, you know, the 5.0 is not beating down your door for it.
And right. Unless, of course, you happen to have BitTorrent running, and whenever you rip a CD, it happens to go to your BitTorrent folder.
Yeah, that's, I think that's probably more where they're getting people, so.
Yeah. So, our next article from Apple Insider. I noticed you're using a Mac.
Yeah.
Are you an Apple person, a new Apple person, old Apple person?
I'm kind of ambivalent to Apple. I'm not an Apple fanboy. They do make good stuff, but right now my laptop at home is running Ubuntu. And the reason I don't have it is because it's an old Sony Vaio and the screen kind of pooped out. So I'm using a TV and it's kind of more of a desktop now than an actual laptop. So
nice.
I had this one. It's actually a gift for someone else. So I'm borrowing it since it...
You're burning it in.
Yeah. I bought it, so it's mine. So until they're ready to receive the gift, I'm using it.
Very nice. Being. Very nice. Well, I hope you get addicted.
Yeah. I don't really see that happening. I'm not going to lie.
But at least you use Linux at home. So
yeah.
I'm just happy you didn't say Windows.
Yeah. Had it, but it, you know.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Yep.
So this article talks about Apple's percentage growing. Now, these numbers seem like a lot only because the current numbers are so small. But in the last fiscal quarter, Apple's sales, Mac sales specifically, grew 66%, 94% in the very large business category. What does your company use? Do they give out, do they force you to use one thing or another?
It's a, we get Windows laptops.
Yeah, mine does the same thing.
We're still running XP, so... I was surprised in looking at the graphic that, or, you know, the infographic there, that it was the very large showed the greatest number of, you know, the greatest percentage of Apple. The thing that surprised me was it wasn't the small or personal use. I thought that those numbers were going to jump up a lot higher.
Right. Those actually, if you go down to the bottom of the article, they show some numbers there. And personal use actually dropped 4%.
Oh, wow. Like, I missed that part.
Yeah. At the very bottom of the article, they list out like 12 sectors and they show, you know, what they are now and what the market is. Education lost 6%. They lost 4% at home use. They gained 16%. They have now 16% in very large business. So I guess our size companies that we both work for are now 16% Apple. Not my company, not yours.
Yeah, obviously. But that to me is the most surprising thing, because most of the, you know, you see students, you know, I'm two years coming out of college. So
it's been that long.
Yeah, I know. A lot of the people that are in college now, my brother just got a MacBook. I think he got a MacBook Pro, and he just, you know, most of the kids that are, well, a lot of the kids that are coming in are getting it. I think probably because it's, there's a lot of parallels for one. Being able to run that, being able to run both Apple and Linux, or Apple Linux and...
Anything, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a big boost, and I'm really, like, I missed that part, the bottom part where it says personal use is down, but that to me is more surprising than the huge percentage jump.
Yeah, it's, I mean, as far as schools go, I mean, there are a lot of colleges even telling you, you know, this is the recommended system.
Yeah.
And some colleges are even giving people MacBooks when they come in.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, Windows laptops aren't even talked about really anymore.
When I was at Juniata, they switched one of the computer labs out, and it went from all PCs to all, I'm going to say the wrong thing, but it was all Apple. It was all Macintosh computers.
Okay.
Just because they were running parallels on all of them, so you could... Boot to Apple or boot to PC.
So you had a choice.
Yeah. And I think that was the main reason. So they cut down. They had, I don't know, 15 or so in this public lab. They had 15 computers, and it ended up being, you know, you had 15. Actually, it was more like
30.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, parallels, what, 80, 90 bucks, something like that?
I honestly couldn't tell you. The one that I'm looking at came with it, so...
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think if you bought it outright, it's like 80 or 90 bucks. But for those education people, you know, their schools can probably get them a copy of Windows for free.
Yeah.
So there's no cost to run two operating systems other than buying parallels.
Right. And even there, I think on the schools, they get a big discount on that as well. So there's really no...
Yeah.
As a non-Apple fanboy, I can say that there's no downside to buying an Apple... For in education, because you can run both.
Right.
I mean, there's no...
Yeah, and even if you didn't want to spend the money for something like Parallels, you know, Apple has Bootcamp, you know, their own native thing to repartition the hard drive and install a real... Because Parallels is still virtual, right?
Right. It's still a virtual machine.
Yeah, so you get Apple's Bootcamp and, you know, really run, you know, Windows on your machine. So, yeah, there's no reason. But either way, they're losing they're losing personal and education ground. I don't know why. But talking about Apple losing ground, PCs are trying to gain some ground in the education arena. This amazed me when I saw this. Buy a PC, get a free Xbox 360. What?
I saw a commercial for this the other day, and I must have missed the beginning or only caught the end because I thought it was open to everyone. I was like, oh, maybe I'll buy a new Windows 7 machine.
Do you have to have an EDU email address?
You have to have an EDU email address on it, according to the article.
So, because I teach at two different places, I can buy two netbooks for like $200 and get two free Xbox 360s?
No.
Oh.
You can buy two. Well, you have to, I think the article said you have to spend $699 to get the free. But if you're buying, you know, if you buy a normal laptop, it's your mid to high range laptop. There you go.
That's the general walk into a store, buy a laptop price.
Exactly. First it was, and then it was, I just canceled, my .edu not too long ago. It just finally got wiped out.
Do you know anybody in the IT department?
I do.
Asking for a back real quick.
The other thing that I thought was kind of funny is from Microsoft's standpoint, it's here's something so you can be productive in college, and here's something so you can procrastinate.
Right. Here's something so you can be the exact opposite of productive.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's interesting, but I'm for one surprised that they're doing something like this. They're giving stuff away.
Yeah.
I mean, I know Microsoft, does a lot of humanitarian stuff. They give away money, but I can't remember in the recent past them giving things away like
products.
A whole game console.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is interesting. If anybody out there listening has done this, let us know how it worked, whether you actually got the Xbox. I mean, it's only a 4 gig Xbox 360, but plug a hard drive in.
Yeah.
Big deal. That's awesome. I might have to try this. Buy a Windows laptop, get the Xbox, then put Linux on it.
Yeah, I mean.
So what browser do you use whenever you browse the internet?
I use Chrome.
You do use Chrome. On your Linux box?
On my Linux box, yes.
Okay.
There was a while that I actually got Chrome when it came out in beta, and it was very unstable, and I tried it, and
Was that like Chromium?
I started out with Chromium, and then I had the newer updates for a while, and then finally, I think it was a couple months ago, they released the stable version.
Nice.
So I've been using Chrome on that for a while.
Does that version of Chrome, well, probably not because this is going to be in a new update, but an article from conceivablytech.com shows how Google is trying to give you more vertical real estate and hide the URL bar. Like, they've hidden pretty much everything else that they can. Now the only thing that's going to be visible are the tabs.
Right.
Do you like this?
I'm kind of ambivalent to this. I don't think that there's a lot of real estate being used up by the toolbar to begin with. So the article that, you'll send links out for this, right?
Yeah. They're up on the site.
Okay. So the link for this one, it shows them. And one of the concerns that they bring up is the phishing scams. And I mean, that to me is you're hitting the nail on the head there. You're clicking on a link and you're not seeing what the actual link in your toolbar.
That was the
is.
Very first thing I thought.
Yeah. Well, the first thing I thought was, that's not a lot of room that it's taking up. And plus, with the Chrome, it's an omnibar. You can search on there. And most of the time, if I'm on a tab and I want something new, I'm up. I just click on there, Alt-Enter, and it opens
a new tab
for me. So I think, I personally don't think I would be using it. I think it is very cool that they're giving you that, more vertical real estate. But for Chrome itself, if you're not having the bookmarks open and there's not a lot of pixels there to begin with.
Yeah, what is that? I mean, it's the size basically of the start menu bar,
right.
The taskbar, and that's like 25 pixels. So they're saving 25 pixels by getting rid of the URL bar. Really?
Yeah.
Like, is it that big of a problem?
There was a mention in the article about mobile browsing and like mobile apps. Now, on a desktop, I don't really see the need for mobile apps on a desktop computer.
Right.
And I use Skyfire for my Android phone.
Okay.
And if I start scrolling down, the toolbar, it has a top and bottom toolbar, and both of those hide once I start scrolling, and I can bring them up, you know, using the option menu. But I think that it's kind of leaning towards that, where it hides everything. But on, don't most mobile browsers already do that? I don't know what the
iPhone still has a bottom toolbar with your back buttons and everything, mm-hmm. but the top toolbar with the URL bar and everything hides when you start scrolling.
Okay.
So I mean, yeah, we don't lose both bars like you do, but yeah, it's. I don't know, because it looks to me like this is going to be one of those mouse over things. Like if you want the URL bar, you mouse over the tab and then it pops up. I hate mouse over things. Yeah. Like whenever I'm using remote desktop and the title in full screen mode and the remote desktop title bar disappears, and if I want to minimize it, I have to mouse over it to get it to pull back down. Sometimes it doesn't pull back down. I hate mousing over things and having something that I want to do be dependent on where am I, you know, 1 pixel movement of my mouse.
I think I have to disagree with you on the remote desktop. I think having that being a mouse over is fine. I always unpin it so it goes up.
Right.
So I have that real estate. And that's more personal preference. It's not part of the browser that I'm hiding. It's when I'm done, you know, or I need to switch to a different window, I can go up and I'm minimizing it anyway. So on Windows and, you know, everything else, you're minimize, you're close and everything else. You're already going to the top. So I'm going to the top to minimize my remote connection, and it's there. Whereas, you know, with this Omnibar, I use it to search with stuff.
Right, or, you want it there.
Yeah, I want it there. That could be personal preference. I think some people will be ecstatic about this.
Yeah, that's very true. Here's the thing that I don't like, you know, going back to the personal preference part of it. It's not so much... I probably explained it wrong when I first said it, but what I don't like is whenever my mouse, when I use, you know, say a remote desktop, I use toolbars that are near the top of the screen.
Right.
Sometimes I will go to click on something on the toolbar and the damn menu will pop down.
Yeah, that is annoying.
And it gets in my way. That's what I hate about mouse over things. But we'll see what Google does. Right now in the current version of a Chromium, there is a checkbox or a radio button, whatever it is. It's an option that you can hide it or unhide it. Right. They don't make you do it. So we'll see what happens, whether it makes it into the real version or not.
As long as it stays an option and that's not the default, I think I would love it, because there's probably some times that you want that to happen.
I agree. I totally agree. Developers especially. So our next article from the Kaspersky Lab threat post. We had talked a lot about Anonymous in many, many previous Sloncasts and the things they do, you know, such as going after... the people who were against WikiLeaks and going after Sony whenever they started suing Geohot. And I believe it was last week or the week before we talked about the splinter groups that have come out of Anonymous. People that were once in Anonymous decided we're going to do our own thing and go hack people on our own. And we had also talked about this guy, Barrett Brown. And it was an Ars Technica article before that talked about somebody who had inside information, you know, somebody who was talking to the public about Anonymous, about the group that wasn't supposed to talk to the public. And now this guy's like, whoa, I'm out.
Yeah.
Like, there are so many splinter groups now. I do not want to be a part of this. I'm done. I'm not talking to you guys about Anonymous anymore. If I were him, I would be scared.
I think the first thing that came to my mind is it's kind of how ironic it was that he was the face of this faceless group.
Right.
But yeah, I would be a little nervous as well. I think, you know, they kicked him out. If I think it's at the bottom of the article, it mentioned something about, you know, separating himself or, you know, the group separating from him to protect their own anonymity.
Yeah, and him and a couple other people also made their own quote-unquote splinter group to go after other people.
You're getting factions into a group that's supposed to be anonymous, I mean, by name. It feels like they're almost trying to gain power over this thing that's, you know, for the people. And I don't want to get into like a geopolitical argument here.
Let's do it.
But it seems odd to me, and it not really odd, but it seems like, you know, you have this, I don't want to say terrorist group, but this
vigilante group.
Vigilante group that's been fighting for, you know, people's rights. And then someone decides, well, I want to be important, and I just did a gesture, you know, hands on the hips, you know, trying to puff
out
your
chest. You did the superhero.
Yeah, the superhero. I'm in charge of this. And I think, and it's, you know, once you get that I in a group like that, then you start seeing it splinter. And I think it's getting to that point. And it kind of makes me nervous.
Yeah, and I half wonder if the people in Anonymous know who the other people in Anonymous are. Like, do they know that these other two people are, you know, 14-year-old script kiddies who are going to get that superhero complex and say, I'm going to take control now? Or are they all 20, 30-something people with good heads on their shoulders who are okay working in a group? You know, do they know that they let somebody in the group who could possibly ruin everything? Or are they just blind to it?
I would assume that I've never been in a group like this, but I understand the group mentality here would be, my assumption would be, I would think there would be more people like me if I was a part of that group. You know, kind of, I don't want to say antisocial, but anti-establishment almost. You know, if it's not good for, if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander. Everyone should be equal. And if you're going in with that type of mentality, you have to assume that everyone in the group with you has that. But there has to be the understanding that there are going to be people who are in it for selfish reasons.
And then how do you find those people and weed them out?
Yeah.
You know, once they get enough information to participate in Anonymous,
right,
how do you take that information away?
The information thing, I mean, we live in the information age, and it's knowledge is power, as G.I. Joe used to say when we were younger.
The more you know. Dun, 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 yeah. Dun. All right, so our next article. Have you ever followed Groklaw, the website Groklaw?
I have not.
So Groklaw is an interesting site because it used to be run by a lawyer who would, you know, make sense of all of the things happening in the tech sector. When Sco sues, you know, the Unix people or whatever, Red Hat gets sued. Most recently, the GeoHot court case with Sony. You know, the people at Groklaw went through all the court cases, made sense of the legal jargon, and wrote articles for the normal public to understand. And we had an article, it was actually a post by the owner of Groklaw a couple episodes ago, that the owner said, I'm done. I can't do it anymore. It's too much. The site is going to stop. Well, as of Monday, May 16th, Mark Webnick is now taking over Groklaw. And Groklaw is not going away now. So we will still have our own law and, I don't know how to say this, but our own law understanding website.
Yeah.
Does law interest you? Is this a site that now that you know about it, you would be interested in?
I think I'm going to look at it some more. Yeah. It seems like it's going to be more, from what I understood from the article that you linked to, it's going to be more of a forum now. The original owner didn't want the pressures of, you know, posting every day and everything.
Right.
I don't know whether I understood it where he may still be active on there, but not nearly as much, or whether he's just washing his hands. I'm done. I'm out. Sorry.
Yeah. I think the former is what the previous article said, whenever this person said that they were done, mm-hmm. You know, they didn't want to do the day-to-day things, but there would still be random blog posts every now and then. So, yeah, I think you're right. He'll still... Is it a she or is it a he? I still can't find the name of the original person who owned it, but I thought it might have been a girl.
I didn't catch that in the article either.
Yeah, I remember seeing a name at one place somewhere, and I don't remember where that was, but... We keep saying he.
If we're wrong, we apologize. Yeah. And if you hear this, please comment and correct us.
Yes, I would like to know who the original owner of Groklaw is. But yeah, so it'll be interesting now. I wonder how this forum mentality is going to happen, because it was nice the way it was before, because you had somebody who knew what they were doing writing the articles. I would be afraid now opening it up a little more to the public that we get people who don't know what they're talking about.
Right.
And, I mean, really, even the stuff that they posted before, it was kind of plain English,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't that plain English. Like, I still had no clue with some things, but I'm happy that it's still here.
When they're explaining law is hard, I understand. Yeah. And trying to get it in plain English, you're losing some of that stuff. It's the same way with trying to explain some of the technical stuff about a computer to someone who doesn't know. It's
what's the difference between memory and a hard drive?
Yeah.
They're not the same thing.
Yeah. But I think even if they open it up to a forum, it seems like there's enough of a I don't want to say a rabid following, but they have enough of a following that if they even if they open up to a forum, it's going to be well moderated by the people that are already on there.
Right.
So you're not going to get someone like me coming in and say, oh, yeah, I took four law classes and this is what this means.
Without, I took law 101.
Yeah, without someone, you know, who's been on it since the beginning saying STFU.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I'm hoping it's kind of more of a Wikipedia type thing where, sure, anybody can come in and edit, but immediately you'll have 30,000 people fixing your mistake.
I feel like that's probably how it's going to what it'll end up being if it does get into the forum thing, because it seems like it's already it has a pretty good following.
Right. The people are there because they care and they want to be there.
Right. I had, like you had asked me before, if I knew much about it. I've heard of it, but I was never on it. So, I mean, if it's enough that, you know, the name Grok Law sounds familiar, it's
right.
Yeah. There's enough of a following though that it's not going to.
Right. Right. Yeah. I'm definitely happy that they're sticking around. I look forward to what they're going to tell us about the GeoHot case as it continues.
Yeah.
So, this next article just kind of makes you mad at government, kind of makes you mad in general. So this one lady, Meredith Baker, she was the FCC commissioner. And so before I say what she's doing now, one of the jobs of the FCC commissioner was to keep companies like Comcast and other internet service providers and people who control information on the internet, blah, 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 to keep them at bay, to make them not do bad things. Well, she is no longer the FCC commissioner. She now works for Comcast. And not only does she work for Comcast, she is Comcast's lobbyist to the government. WTF.
I really don't understand how this is okay. Like, I mean, it was a few months ago that she signed off saying, you know, this is accepted. This is okay. I think it was the merger between Comcast and NBC Universal.
Yes.
How, I mean, I don't understand how you can go from okaying that to going to work for them and how there's not like a conflict of interest or something.
Well, they brought that up in the article, but, you know, from what I gathered from the article, this was more of a semantics thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, it could technically be illegal, but the way we're doing it, it's going to work. She can't lobby certain people, but she can go lobby other people that are, you know, have equal or greater power. She can't lobby the FCC, but she can lobby these other people within the government.
I'm okay with her going to be a lobbyist. I'm okay with that. That's fine. Whatever. My problem is, how is she okay? How is it okay for her to sign off on this merger, this giant freaking merger, and then go work for them? It's like, I'm in charge of your raise, or, you know, you getting a bonus. It's, well, I guess it's the same as the government being able to give their own bonuses.
Right.
They're, you know, you're shaking the hand that you're shaking with both hands there. It's just, it's no good.
Yeah. It's, and I mean, this is going to be great for Comcast, bad for us.
Oh, yeah.
Because she knows everything about everything of how Comcast can now skirt the things that she was enforcing on them.
Right. That's terrible. And like you said, it just makes me angry.
Right. I mean, there's absolutely nothing we can do about it. You know, Comcast is, it's not the government anymore. We have no say over what Comcast does. And now that she works there, nobody can do anything. I'm done.
Yeah.
Next article.
Yes.
So I think you mentioned that you had something to say about this one earlier. Facebook apparently entered into a smear campaign against Google. So for the longest time, this smear campaign was going on and people didn't know who it was. They first thought, you know, it might have been Microsoft, it might have been some other companies, you know, some other companies that made sense that they would do it, Apple maybe. But then it turns out, nope, it's Facebook. What in the world? Do you see any reason for this? Why would Facebook want to do this?
I don't know. I think it's, I don't want to say David taking on Goliath because I know Facebook is huge, but the thing that I took out of this article is, well, the first thing is, Facebook is pinging Google on privacy issues.
Right.
Really?
Yeah, this needs the oh really owl.
Yeah, this is, you know, the old story about people in glass houses. After all that Facebook's been through with their issues with privacy, and you know, to throw that stone at Google is ridiculous. The other thing that I found interesting was Google sees, or I think it said Google saw Facebook or sees Facebook as a threat. Now that for Facebook, if I'm reading that and I work at Facebook, I think that is awesome.
Oh, yeah. As a Facebook employee?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, anyone in, you know, Mark Zuckerberg is probably just like...
He's like, he probably called everybody together and, you know, just walked up to the microphone and said, guys, we did it!
Google sees us as a threat. And then walked off stage.
Right. Drop the mic.
Yep. Drop the mic. Cheers.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the reason that, well, first off, Facebook threw the stone in the glass house, but nobody knew it was them at first.
Right.
I think they wanted to get away with this.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't until recently that somebody found out and called them on it, and then somebody inside of Facebook said, yeah, we kind of did that.
Yeah.
So it was very clear they did not want people to know that it was them who did this. Number two, Facebook and Google kind of have a social thing going on. You know, Facebook is the social network, but Google is trying to start their own to compete against it. And I had a third point. Oh, people who search.
Right.
We as tech people search on Google. That's just what we do. But Facebook, if you type something in Facebook that is not a person's profile name, I don't know if you've ever done this before, but you see results from Bing that pop up in the Facebook list.
I don't think I ever noticed that.
Yeah, go to Facebook and don't type in somebody's name. Type in Microsoft Zune and hit enter. You might get a Facebook page for the Microsoft Zune, but the next results will be Bing or some other search engine's internet search results.
Hmm.
And I think that that is one reason why Google sees them as a threat, because Facebook is a search engine. It's not their first thing, but they do it.
Right. I think the stone throwing started with Google trying to, you know, one up Facebook at their own game. And once, once you get a, you know, hint that this giant competitor is, you know, stepping into your market, they're, you know, I can see where they're coming from trying to get,
right,
you know, that smear campaign, but you have to know it's coming back to you, and you know you're going to have egg on your face. And to be quite honest, I know I've some friends that their siblings work at Facebook, but I don't trust Facebook as far as I can throw them. And for as big as they are, that's not very far.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's kind of a catch-22 for me, because I signed up for Facebook when it started. And then, you know, through the new iteration, oh, they're letting high schoolers on. And it just, you know, it's been creeping. And it's great for Facebook because they're getting, they're huge.
Yeah, but there's no restrictions anymore.
Right. They're big enough now that they kind of have they do have a monopoly on social networking, you know, pushing yourself out there socially, not, you know, LinkedIn is more business, and there's a lot of more business. And,
yeah, there are other quote-unquote social networks, but you're right, Facebook is the monopoly.
Right. And they're just, you know, they're doing stuff because they can.
Exactly right. And, yeah, it's you throw the stone at Google. Google is the company that has so much money, they will just do stuff that other people do worse and release it for free.
Right.
Because that's how rich they are.
Yeah.
Like, when they released Google Maps, they did that because MapQuest sucked and Yahoo Maps sucked. And Google said, you know what? We got $1 trillion. Let's just make our own and give it to people for free because we can do that.
And they did it better.
They did it better. They do everything better. To throw a stone at the company that has that much money that they can just release good things for free, bad move.
Yeah. I think Facebook's big enough that they won't see a big hit. I think they may have cornered the market on that type of social networking. And unless it ties into your already Google profiles or everything, you know, if it ties into everything else that you have Google, you may see it start to ebb away. But
Yeah, Facebook is not going to open their APIs to allow other social networks to take their data. Facebook is Kleenex now.
Yeah.
You know, you don't say what social network are you on.
Yeah.
You say, do you have a Facebook account?
Exactly. I mean, it wasn't a lot of competition when MySpace... Well, I guess MySpace is still up.
They're still there, but whatever.
But you can log into MySpace with your Facebook account. So,
That shows how long it's been since I've been on MySpace.
I read an article about it a while ago, and I think I was looking up a band. A band had a MySpace page, right. And I was like, log in with your Facebook. I was like,
whoa.
Wow. And I mean, that really does says it all about the social networking.
Right. Yeah, whenever Facebook is a login option now.
Yes.
Crazy. So our next article is from Ford, Ford.com. And now I'm going to preface this with, I don't know much about this because this gets into very deep algorithmic speak. And that's not me because the Google people are much smarter than me. But the developers at Ford are looking into taking Google's prediction API and putting that into their newer vehicles. Have you ever ridden in a Ford vehicle that has like the My Ford Touch or any of the newer ones?
I have not.
I haven't ridden in one with the My Ford Touch, but I've ridden in one with Sync.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I don't think you get the feel of it with just Sync. I think you need the My Ford Touch with the big LCD so you can get maps and directions right. And everything like that. So yeah, I can't speak to this, but it's interesting to see Ford teaming up with Google. This is just one of those things, you know, like I just said before, Google has money to throw around and now they're like, hey, Ford, we'll do this for you.
I think this is an incredibly intelligent move by Ford, and it's really cool that they're doing it. Why? I mean, from Ford's standpoint, why spend all this money on research and development and, you know, number crunching on this? Google's already done it.
Right.
Like, they're the master of crunching the numbers of the, insurmountable amount of data that is the internet.
Right. They hire people who that's all they do is crunch numbers.
They crunch numbers. So why not let them crunch the numbers on the data from your car? I mean, I misunderstood the article when I read it. I thought it was they're doing stuff so when they develop new cars, it'll do it. Not putting the information in your car actually so it'll, as you're driving.
Right.
But still, that's amazing that, you know, they'd have the insight. Well, I mean, it's not huge insight saying, oh, hey, Google, you want to look at this?
Right. But still, I mean, predictive driver behavior.
Yeah.
Like, really? I mean, they're going to be able to figure out, you know, on this day at this time, you normally drive to work. Would you like to go back to work? Press yes to start the directions there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, things like that. They know where you're driving, so they know how to better brake and how to better use your fuel. And I mean, this has a lot of benefits, but there are also the people out there who are going to say, whoa, now you're giving Google all of the information on where I drive.
Right. I think it was last episode you mentioned about the cell phones having the information where your cell phone is. Yeah. It's already there. I can see the kind of, you know, being nervous about it. And some things, it's awesome. Like, you know, being able to get in, do you want directions to work? That's cool. But it's also, you know, at what point do you know directions to work?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty much after the first time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm interested to see where this goes just because with the minds of Google behind this, I'm sure there are going to be things that this article doesn't talk about that we can't even imagine wanting our car to do.
Right.
Like that seems to be what Google is good at. They come out with a product and you're like, holy crap, I didn't even know I wanted this.
How do you live without it after you have it? Yeah.
How do I live without it? So my vehicle now is 6 years old. I think it's going on 7 years old. I'm going to run it till it dies. But whenever it does die, it's going to be, you know, another Ford vehicle. It's going to have the My Ford Touch. I'm going to get the big glass Vista View roof because I love that. But it's going to be one of these vehicles that can do everything for me. Hopefully, by the time I buy a car, it can drive itself. That would be amazing. So our next couple articles, we actually have a security section this week. We got four articles to talk about in the security world. The first two go together. So you have used Windows before, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And you've probably downloaded at least 14 programs to your Windows computer.
Almost weekly, actually.
14 programs weekly. So did you know that chances are very good that one of those 14 programs is malicious?
After reading this article, yes.
Yeah, so that is what a Network World is saying, that there is a study done, and one out of every 14 programs downloaded by Windows users is malicious. Holy crap.
Yes, holy crap is the first thing. If you think about it, though, does your mom use a computer?
Yes.
Does your grandma use a computer?
No.
Oh.
No, see, grandparents don't.
Oh, my grandparents do. How, you know, of that 14 downloads, how many do you think are, you know, techie people like you or myself versus how many do you think it is, you know, your parents or your grandparents?
It's very skewed.
Yeah. I mean, one, you know, 1 in 14 sounds astronomical. And then you think, like, you know, they have a link in, or they mention in their Facebook social engineering,
yep.
Which is, I think, I don't know how many people I've gotten messages just this past couple months. Hey, check out this link. No. I don't.
I got hit by one of those. I saw somebody post what looked like a video, and I'm like, oh, this looks like an awesome video. I forget what it was about, but I'm like, dude, I want to watch that. I clicked on it. And I immediately knew when I got to the page, I'm like, this is a malicious page. I closed it. But the code had already happened during the click-through that reposted the link to my Facebook profile. It's like, so I knew enough not to download whatever virus was on that page, but the Facebook malicious code had already happened.
Right. You click it and you're just like, oh.
Right.
But the problem is a lot of people, they click it and they wait for it to download. And then, oh, you have to download this codec for it to work. And they download
that. That's the biggest thing.
And then they...
Yep.
Then you're in trouble.
Yeah. And I mean, like you said, you know, it seems like a big number, but it's really not just because of the people who are using it. But I'm going to turn it around and say it kind of is because all of those people are using this.
Right.
And they are downloading a lot of things. And 1 in 14, everybody's getting viruses.
Right.
Like, this is horrible.
The thing that is most worrisome is not so much the straight out viruses, not so much straight out malware. The thing that I've been seeing more in fixing computers and actually having it happen in myself is the scareware. And I think there's, you know, we're going to touch on this a little bit later, is the antivirus, well, the antivirus virus, really.
Right, the you need to pay $30 to clean this.
Or I've seen some that aren't so much you have to pay to do this. It becomes the administrator on your XP machine. It search anything you open is malicious. I tried opening, you know, I had someone's computer that I was trying to fix. I opened AVG to scan. AVG has a virus. It's infected. You can't open this.
Right.
Well, how about Malwarebytes? No, it's infected. How about if I open Task Manager? The administrator denied
that. Has disabled
this. Yeah. It's ridiculous. And, you know, your normal user is looking at that like, oh.
Right, they see this, and the bad part is these things look so real.
Oh, they
so
look
real.
Perfect. Some of them, they, you know, they'll pull Microsoft colors and their, you know, the design,
the logos and everything.
Yes, yeah. And it, you know, I've seen one go as far as say, well, it didn't say Microsoft. I think it said Windows.
Windows. Yeah.
Yeah,
I saw the same one. I know which one you're talking about.
And it's terrible because it looks legitimate, and you just, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, they're already being illegal, so they're not worried about stealing the name and logos.
Right.
You know, they're going to make stuff that will trick people.
Right.
I mean, okay, so two things I want to say to the listeners out there. Chances are all of the listeners, you already know this, but tell everybody you know who doesn't know. One, you will never have antivirus software run inside of a browser.
No.
So for those pages that people get that it looks like it's scanning your computer within Internet Explorer or Firefox, it's not real. Tell them that.
Yeah, especially, I don't know if you've ever seen it. I run Linux at home. I got one that it brought up, you know, searching my computer. And I'm like, that's not right.
It looked like Windows.
It looked like Windows.
Yep.
And I'm sure that happens on Apple machines too, that you'll see it and it pops up and it's running Windows. And the reason they're doing that is because
most people
have it.
Yep. And the second thing I want to tell you to tell other people is that if your quote-unquote antivirus software tells you that you have to pay to clean something, it's not real antivirus software. Don't do it.
Yes.
Never give your credit card information for that. So just give those two tips of advice to, or pieces of advice to your loved ones.
Exactly.
Because you will be the ones to fix their computers.
Yeah.
Not cool. So our next article goes right along with this from winbeta.org. And everybody had said for the longest time, oh, you know, Windows 7, it's so much more secure. They have so many more layers of the operating system. You know, there aren't as many viruses. It's not getting hit as much. That's not the case anymore. Computer World reports, when Beta here reported it, that Win7's malware infection rate is climbing while XP's falls. So Windows 7 is not really any more secure than any other version of Windows. It's now just getting the market share.
Right.
So now hackers are attacking it, and XP's rate is falling. Not many people have XP anymore, so they're not designing for that. So, I mean, no operating system is really better than another. Now that Windows 7 is in most people's hands, everything's going to attack that.
Now, I agree. You actually took, like, in my notes, I said exactly the same thing. That, the, you know, since Windows 7 and more people are using it, that's why it's going up. Now, the thing that should be noted is the percentage went up. The numbers that they gave is it's still, for Windows 7, it's 4 computers are infected per 1,000. So, I mean, that's still fairly low. Compared to XP is down to 14 per 1,000.
Right.
You know, Windows 7 is, it probably is a little bit more secure with the different layers. But the thing of it is, it's been out long enough that people are starting to find the holes.
Right.
And like you said, XP is starting to slow, you know, go down because less and less people are having it. And they've released, I mean, better tools. Since people aren't developing new malware, new things for it, the security's catching up.
Right.
Like, and it's, you know, it's almost to the point now where they caught up enough that it'll find it.
Right. Yeah. As long as you run, you know, new and updated antivirus and anti-malware tools, you're pretty much good on an XP machine.
Right.
But you're not so much on a Windows 7 machine because now they're attacking it more.
You're not going to get that, you know, that zero-day protection is going to be harder to find for XP or for Windows 7. And, you know, zero-day protection on XP is, it's more founded. Like, you have that, you can feel more protected.
It's safe to say that a lot, if not most, of the 0 days have been found and fixed by now.
Right.
Whereas Windows 7 is newer and they haven't been found yet.
Exactly.
Yeah, so those of you out there running Windows 7 without antivirus software, you know, don't think that you don't need it.
Yeah, you definitely need it. I mean, it's a Windows machine. It's going to get, there's going to be exploits for it.
Yeah, and this is not my advice. This actually came from somebody I used to work with, much smarter than me, who actually, you know, does hacking for a living. And he basically said, if you own something with a writable storage, you need antivirus.
Right.
Like, period. It doesn't matter if it's Linux, Apple, Windows, does not matter. If you can write to it, you need something to protect it.
Exactly.
I mean, case in point, my MacBook sitting here recording the show, I have Kaspersky antivirus running on it. It hasn't found anything because nobody's really attacking it.
You may never need it.
But it's there.
But that day that you need it and you don't have it,
you're screwed.
You're screwed.
Yep. And while we're talking about that, our next article from the BBC News. We had talked about the scareware and the fake antivirus applications. Well, the day has come, my friends, that if you own a Mac, you have the ability to get fake antivirus. There is a virus malware called Mac Defender that whenever you get it on your machine, it looks like a real Mac app. You know, it uses all the colors and the icons and everything. Looks like some real antivirus program. And just like everything else, wants you to pay for, you know, the upgraded version to fix things, blah, blah, blah. So here's the thing that gets me about this with Apple. Now, this also happens now with Windows 7, is that whenever you are prompted to install something, the Apple machine will always ask you for your administrator password.
Right.
Like, even though you're logged in as an administrator, you can't do anything without re-entering in the admin password. So those people who are getting this need to put in the password again.
Right.
And they're still doing it. I mean, that's just like on a Windows 7 machine, having to click that UAC box that says, this is going to modify this part of your system. Do you want to allow it or deny it? Everybody just clicks allow.
Yeah. My first thought when I read this was, finally, finally there's an antivirus for Apple, so the smug
right
Apple fanboy such as
me
such as Kevin can zip it
right.
And it's like I said before, it's because more people are buying. Well, more you seem to have more people buying Apples.
Right. I mean, the article we talked about earlier, 19% higher in government. And
exactly.
Whatever. Yeah, and, I mean, yes, I'm a smug Apple user, but I've had antivirus on my Mac for over a year now.
Yeah.
So I've always known this day would come and I'm ready for it.
Yeah. The thing that we need to be, I guess the real take-home message on this is don't trust anything you download. Like, I don't know how many times I've downloaded stuff. I'm like, oh, it's fine. And then it comes back and it bites you. And it just, it's a terrible feeling. And sometimes I get it, I accidentally download something. And it, my laptop, before I put Ubuntu on it, I downloaded something that I thought was okay. It was a BitTorrent. And I opened it and it just, and I knew right away as soon as I opened, I was like, that's not, oh.
Why did I do this?
Yes. And then at a certain point, I, as a techie, sometimes I like battling the malware. I was like, ooh, the first time I got, went to the control panel and it said, this has been disabled by the administrator. I thought, oh, you sneaky buggers.
I know how to fix this.
That was good. Now, I was impressed because it was the first time I had seen it. But, subsequent times, it's just been like, this again.
Right. Yeah. Here's the thing about all of this malware. Everybody who uses a computer thinks they know what they're doing. Right. I don't care if this is your first time touching a computer. When you start using it, you think you know better. I'm telling you right now, you don't. No. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're me or Mike or Mark Zuckerberg or the PhDs who work at Google. You do not know better. You cannot trust things just because you think you downloaded something good.
Right.
I mean, we've all been hit.
Yeah.
The best of us have been hit. You just can't trust things. Antivirus software. Anti-malware software. You need something.
Yes. And make sure that whatever you're downloading either comes from a trusted site, is a trusted name in that as well.
Like right. Don't get Joe's antivirus.
Yeah, that's probably bad news bears.
Alter Math Owl.
Yeah. When I first started using Malwarebytes, I was super, super nervous about it. I didn't know anything about it, and I needed it because I had malware at the time. I had to get on someone else's computer, and I looked it up and looked at reviews, and you got to do your homework on these types of things.
I did the exact same thing. For the longest time, I was an Adaware user because Adaware was like the tool. It would find everything. It would get rid of everything, and then it started not being able to get rid of everything. Then they went to a pay version, and I'm like, I don't want this. And then I saw somebody got some sort of malware virus, asked me to fix it. And I started Googling what the name was, what the antivirus was picking it up as. And all of the fix-it articles said, oh, get Malwarebytes, it'll get rid of it. And I'm immediately thinking, are these malicious fix-it articles telling me to download something with malware in the name? So yeah, I did the same thing. I Googled it. And really, people, if you're downloading something, how long does it take to Google it?
Right.
It's going to take you 15, 20 seconds to figure out whether something is real or not. Google everything.
Exactly.
It's there for you.
Or Bing if you like Microsoft.
Search for something. Yeah.
Search it.
Yeah. Replace Google with the word search. Search for something.
Do your homework.
Yes.
Is the take home.
You might be out of school, but do your homework.
Right.
Because, and why should you do your homework? Well, at least if you own an Apple, they're not going to help you. A memo recently went out to Apple support reps, the geniuses. Do not attempt to remove malware. So because of this, the previous article we talked about with that fake Apple antivirus, a lot of people were, bringing it into the geniuses, calling them on the phone, the Apple Care support line. And finally, Apple just released a statement and said, don't help people. Point them to places on our website where they can get security tools and they can, read frequently asked questions and figure it out on their own. But apparently they realized this was going to cost them a lot of money if all of their geniuses and Apple Care people were tied up on the phone fixing this. Have you heard of another company who does this?
Not at all.
I haven't either. I mean, Microsoft has a dedicated part of their support chain
right.
that helps people with malware. Apple was saying, we're not doing this.
Right. I would be absolutely livid. Now, I personally don't call tech support very often, And if I do,
you need the help.
I need the help. And normally when I call, I'm like, look, I went to school for IT. I work in IT. I've tried this, this, and this, and this. I need, you know, no offense to, you know.
Right. Not trying to make them sound dumb and you sound smart, but you're just saying, you know, treat me like somebody who knows what I'm doing.
I've tried this already. I need, you know, it's one of the first things I tell them. I'm like, look, I don't mean to offend you, but I've done everything you're going to tell me to do.
Right.
And if I were to call, I mean, how much is a MacBook Pro, a new one, or a MacBook? You're spending
a little over a thousand.
You're spending over $1,000 on this, and you're calling the help, and they're telling you,
no.
Did you install it? Well, no, not yet. Delete it and don't worry about it. If you installed it, they're like, here's a website. Look at it. Find it yourself.
Right.
I would be absolutely, I think that may have turned me off of it.
Yeah, I can see any company doing this if you don't have a warranty with them. But, you know, this memo went out to the AppleCare people. So this is, I guess I'm just going to assume that this is for the people who paid the extra couple hundred dollars for the 2-year AppleCare warranty. And right. They're still telling you, we're not going to help you.
Right. Even, like, in the article, it says that it may not be a free fix from Microsoft or HP or something like that. But, and I'm not saying that, you know, having to pay to get it fixed is great, but paying's better, you know, it's
better than losing everything.
Something is better than nothing. And with Apple, you're getting nothing. Right. No help whatsoever. And as far as whoever wrote this, they're probably peeing themselves with laughter right now, because
right.
that is probably the best thing that they could have heard. And I mean, not my doctorate, but a senior project.
I was going to say, should I have called you Dr. Link?
No, not Dr. Link. I can't think of what the term is. I'm blanking. But I spent my entire senior year.
Thesis?
Thesis, thank you. Because we didn't call them a thesis at Juniata. We had called it something else. It was so I could graduate with distinction in information technology.
Gotcha.
And again, I'm not trying to make myself sound smart, but I spent
time. You are a smug bastard, sir.
I've been told before, but anyway, I spent an entire, you know, year of college dedicating myself to learn and teach myself about social engineering. And it is absolutely wonderful and scary as hell to think, because security systems today are amazing. The weakest part of security is and always will be between the keyboard and the chair.
The PEBCAC.
Yeah, PEBCAC. Exactly.
Yep. Problem exists between keyboard and chair.
Yes.
Which, by the way, if you don't know what that means, it's you.
Yes. You are the reason why malware exists, why every...
Yep. Security systems are awesome. They are 100% effective at computerized things. When you insert a person into the equation, they fail a lot.
Yes. And it's... It's hard to trick a computer. It's very difficult. I've tried before. You have to know what you're doing. To trick a person, it's...
Give them a piece of candy.
Yeah. It's not as hard. I mean, some people, you know, to be skeptical is good when it comes to computers. You have to, unless you know... No, I don't even want to say unless you know what you're doing.
Right, because those are the people who get it the most.
Unless you know what you're downloading, you know what you're clicking on, be wary.
Yeah. I always go back to the Kevin Mitnick hack, which really wasn't a hack. It was just a cheap little social engineering trick. Throw a floppy disk on the floor of a big company and write salaries.xls on mm-hmm. it. Somebody's going to pick it up exactly. and say, I want to know everybody's salaries. That's all the harder it is to trick somebody into giving you any information or ruining their computer.
I did a survey when I was doing my, you know, thesis. And I had a survey and had questions on it, like how often do you change your password? Do you read the end user agreement? What is your username? What is your password? And people filled it out, and I didn't get a lot of responses, but I did get some people who wrote their actual password on there. And I thought I was hilarious on this. I was giving people dum-dums. I bought a bag of dum-dums that you would see in like your bank. You'd pick up, and I was handing them out, and I had two people notice that I handed them a dum-dum and looked at the thing and went, you.
Wow. I don't know what to say about that. I thought that most people would be smart enough to not give out their passwords.
Most people were. Now, I think most people were because I was asking students. I actually devised a way to... I copied the CSS of the login screens for the college, and I was going to send out, a phishing scam.
Right.
All legitimate. I asked the network administrator. I asked the head of the IT department. I got all clearances, but I didn't get the provost's, so I didn't actually get to do it.
Yeah.
And actually, when they heard, they flipped because it was a week before finals, and they were worried that people were going to flip out. Because right. I had it, and I asked for, login with your username and password. So I had that. And I had, any information I asked for. They didn't, they told me not to ask for a social security number, but...
I did.
No, I didn't, actually. I listened to that because I really didn't want... I wanted to show people that if you punch this information in, you're in deep caca.
Right.
So I had it, they filled out, I think it was like the address information and birth date and some other stuff. Enough information that I had it, I had what I needed.
Right. You could piece together, you could answer secret questions.
Yes. I could mess them up. I could get what I wanted out of them. I could, get banking. I could sign up for
credit cards
and everything else. And then once they hit submit on that, I went blank white screen saying, warning, if you did this, you screwed up.
Right.
Now, this is all in-house, so you're okay for this. But if you did something like this recently and you didn't know where it was from,
right,
here's what you need to do. And I did, I changed the URL. Instead of juniata.edu, it was juniata.com. And there were, I didn't make it perfect because I knew I could, having the insider information. But I made it look good enough that it was going to trick some people. And
right, enough to say, did you happen to notice that it's .com?
Yeah.
Did you happen to notice that this isn't what it always looks like?
Exactly. And I made a point on that final page to point out saying, this is this, and this is this. And I was nervous when I was introducing it because I thought, there's no way the network department and everyone else is going to be okay with that.
Right.
They were more excited about it than I was. They wanted it, and they're like, this is the best way to teach someone is to have it happen to you.
Right.
And I think you and I both, we both had this thing happen where we've clicked on something and then went, oh.
Immediately.
Yeah. The problem, we know immediately because we understand the tech. If you do understand the tech and your, your mom, your family that doesn't, explain to them, if it starts acting funny, and you're opening yourself up for a lot of calls of,
right.
It's different. But, my grandma calls me all the time. She calls my cell phone. I know it's a computer problem. It's part of the job.
Right. I don't know. Do you listen to the Twit podcast?
Sometimes, yes.
So there was a guest on there recently. I don't know if it was Twitter, if it was MacBreak, but he actually said that he tells his parents, anytime you need to install something, call me and ask me if it is okay to install it every time.
Yeah.
He gets a lot of phone calls because of it. But his parents' computer does not have any infections.
Right. And it's a 5-minute phone call saying, oh, yeah, that's okay, that's fine.
Right.
Versus spending 2 hours at minimum trying to fix their computer. So,
yeah, it's rough.
Be skeptical is today's take home message. Can you put that in the Slumpcast 35?
Be skeptical. We have a show title, folks. Yeah. Maybe I need to start doing show titles.
Yeah.
So we're going to end the show with a couple articles in the mobile space. The first one we kind of knew was going to happen. It's from PC World. Whenever the iPhone came to Verizon, Verizon started offering unlimited data plans at the same price AT&T did to try and convince AT&T iPhone users to switch over to Verizon. We knew that wasn't going to last forever. Well, now, it's pretty much done. If it hasn't happened now, it's going to happen very soon that the unlimited plans are going away. They're going to a tiered structure just like everybody else. Do you use Verizon, Mike?
I do use Verizon, and the unlimited plan was available way before, since I've had a smartphone. I got a BlackBerry a couple years ago.
And you could get unlimited back then?
Unlimited back. It was 30, whatever it is now.
So this is going to make a lot more people mad.
Yes. And I think it'll make people mad originally, and then until they see what the restrictions are, until we see what it is. and I know I kind of cut you off, but...
No, no, that's fine.
The article says, you know, it's going to be like 2 gigabytes for a certain price. It's, you know, it's tiered like AT&T is. I don't know about most people, but how much do you actually use your mobile data? I mean, when I'm at my house, when I'm, you know, 90% of the time I'm on Wi-Fi. And without, you know, if I didn't have Wi-Fi on my phone, I would be livid. Like, I would be upset because I do a lot of stuff. I do, you know, I watch YouTube videos. I do stream music. I'll do all this, that, and the other. But I'm on Wi-Fi. Like, I'm at my house doing this. But
yeah, I don't use Wi-Fi almost ever.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I figure my phone has a cell data ability. I'm just going to use it because Wi-Fi takes me 3 extra clicks to turn on.
Okay. See, I have like 1 extra click for Wi-Fi on. And service in my house is less. I think I don't get 3G at my house. So there's no point to me, you know, having that on all the time. I might as well just use the Wi-Fi that, you know, there's going to be four other people in the house using at one time. So, and that's maximum. So,
yeah, I mean, right now I am a third of the way through my billing cycle and I've only used 163 megabytes.
Right.
However, I have had months where I stream video at work and I've been well over 2 gigabytes.
Right.
So I don't know what the best thing is, you know. Is the higher plan good? You pay more money for the off chance that you use that much, or do you risk the overage fees, however exorbitant those may be, if you have a smaller plan? I don't know which one saves you money.
I think it'll depend on how Verizon does it. I think in the article, I don't have AT&T, so I don't know how, and you know, I don't have a personal review from it, but they were saying that they had, the person writing the article said that they did the 2 gigabyte plan, and normally they use, like, that's their monthly average for like the past 6 months or something. And there was a couple months where they went over 2 gigs, but the way that their plan set up is they get an extra gig for, I think, $5 extra. So they, or $10 extra, because they ended up paying like $35 a month for 3 gigs of data, which sounds like a lot per month, but you're already paying $30 a month for unlimited, and you're, most people aren't using it. So when it comes down to it, you're really not, I mean, you're going to have to do your homework again. You're going to have to see what your data usage is, and Verizon has a free app to do it, so you can look.
AT&T does as well.
Yeah. You can see how much you're using, and if it's, you know, if you're using 100 gigabytes, or yeah, 100 gigabytes,
wow,
100 megabytes a month, you might as well get the lowest that you can and save some money.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I'm afraid because, you know, once these unlimited plans go away, as soon as you change your plan, there's no going back.
Right.
So that's what I'm afraid of, because AT&T doesn't have it anymore.
Yeah.
So. And the worst part, here's the worst part. These cell carriers will do everything within their power to trick you.
Yeah.
To make you do something that, oh, by the way, this also modifies your cell package. And because you modified your cell package, we had to drop your data plan because the one you have doesn't exist anymore. You know, they will do that to you any which way they can.
Right. Now, this may be because I'm still on the family share plan. When I got my BlackBerry, they changed it, and it ended up, I think, changed the way we did texting. And my dad at the time, you know, I was living at home at the time, and he was livid. He went down to the place, and like he had a long conversation. Actually, no, he called them and had a long conversation, and I left the room because he was, it was bad, and I wanted no part of it. But somehow he got it worked out that there was something that they changed. Like, we lost a certain amount of minutes but got free unlimited texting back. So, and I don't think that that's going to happen for everyone. So, I know, I'm a little remiss in saying that. So,
it could happen. It might not.
You can try it, but I'm sure if you say, oh, you know, if you're a Verizon customer saying, you know, they're going to drop your data plan and you're going to pay more for it, and you're like, I'll just go to AT&T. You know, you're going to get them to pause there.
Right.
Yeah,
they tried to do this with me. I went on the chat, the support chat, and I said, I had just updated my phone to whatever version of iOS had enabled tethering. I updated it because of tethering. I wanted tethering. I'm like, oh, great, it has this now. I'm totally going to start using this. So I went to use it, clicked on it on my phone, and it's like, you need to call to request this be activated. I'm like, oh, whatever. So I went on support chat and did that for them. And, you know, the dude told me once, you know, this is going to require you to change to the internet tethering data plan, you know, for this many dollars a month. And I said, you know, I will only do this if I keep my unlimited data and can add tethering. And after that, he never mentioned it again, but he, every question was, so you want me to do this? So you want me to do this? I can do this right now for you.
Yeah.
You know, he wanted me to do that to get rid of my unlimited plan.
Yeah. And I mean, they're getting paid twice there. The nice thing about that is they actually told you, with my phone, I have a Samsung Fascinate on Verizon, and it came enabled with tethering. A mobile hotspot.
Right.
What they don't tell you is you get charged for it.
Oh, wow.
And you don't get told that. And I was a little leery about it because I thought I had heard something, you know, that it when if you use this, there's something actually that you have to pay.
Right.
So I think I turned it on twice for like 30 seconds each time just to see, you know, what it does. And I read on, you know, I looked online because I was really curious. I was like, you know, this is a native app. It's on the phone. It came with the phone. It's a Verizon, you know, it's all this. And I looked online and there is nothing in my plan that says you can use tethering or you can use this without being charged.
Right.
There is a thing that says if you have a phone that says, you know, to enable this, you have to pay an extra, I think it's an extra $30 on top of the unlimited data plan. And I was like, that's
a lot of money.
That's not cool.
Yeah.
That's not cool that they'll let you use it. And then the next time you get a bill, you see an extra
$130.
Yeah. And
yeah, that's, I did not know that they did that. That is not cool.
I believe that is the case, and that's what I've seen online. I have not actually used tethering, you know, I've not used the mobile hotspot on my phone. So, and I mean, that scared me that.
Right. Yeah. I wouldn't do it either.
I wouldn't. Yeah.
Yeah. That's very scary. While we're talking about Verizon, though, let's talk about the iPhone on Verizon. Now, there have been rumors going around for the past, I don't know how many months, about what the iPhone 5 is going to be. Well, finally, one of the rumors was put to rest. And the Verizon CFO said the next iPhone will be CDMA and GSM. So it will be a world phone. Now, this is just me making an assumption. You know, this is me inferring from what he said. But that means it's not going to be LTE. You know, LTE is neither CDMA or GSM. So if this dude is saying the phone is CDMA and GSM, that tells me that it can't be an LTE phone.
I would agree. From the way I read the article, they had said that he was very tactical when fielding the questions about 4G LTE.
Right.
And I'm under the same assumption that it will not be, because they said that they're putting a lot more into the Android side of the 4G LTE. So,
right. He said the network will pour in Android phones with 4G LTE capabilities this year. So that was his way of answering the question. I'm disappointed, because for those people who know me, I've bought a new iPhone every year, you know, because there has always been something on the new iPhone that I wanted. You know, 3G to 3GS, it was the awesome or the better camera with real focusing. 3GS to 4 was the front-facing camera, and that it was so much faster and better battery life. 4 to 5 was going to be LTE. Like, I was going to switch to Verizon, pay whatever I needed to pay to get out of my AT&T contract in the fall to switch to Verizon to get an LTE iPhone. But now that it's not going to be this, I might just stay with the iPhone 4 for another year. Like, there's no real reason for me to do this.
I would agree if I had an iPhone.
Right.
But I read the article and thought, cool.
Right, you don't care.
I still don't want an iPhone.
Really? You don't want an iPhone?
I do not.
Do you want me to put mine in front of your face and you can play with it? And
here,
I know what your phone is. A lady at work has the same phone. I play with it all the time, and you're going to hate me when I say this. I despise it.
I think it's a tomato-tomato type of thing.
Yeah.
For
me, it's the look.
Yeah.
Like, an Android phone to me looks like Linux is running on a phone, which is not what I want to think when I'm using a phone. I don't want to think, oh, this phone is running an operating system, and that happens to be this, and it looks like this. Like, I just want to use my phone.
Yeah. I think I kind of look at it the opposite way. I'm looking at it, you know, it's a smartphone, and I like knowing that it's intelligent. And it,
right.
Like I said before, I'm not really an Apple fanboy. I like what they do. I'm not really, I don't, I feel like what I have, like my phone does everything that your phone does.
Right.
Minus,
right.
It doesn't have the front-facing camera, which is cool.
But there are Android phones that
yeah,
do.
Yeah, there are Android phones yeah. that do that. And actually, when I got this phone, the, there, you know, it was like a month before the iPhone came out for Verizon, and the yep. lady was like, so you don't want an iPhone? I was like, nope, not at all. I am very happy getting this phone because it, I mean, it's the same, it's a smartphone.
Right.
It's all preference now. To me, anyway.
No, you're exactly right. And that's the only reason why I won't get an Android phone. It's just personal preference.
Right.
It's not that it can't do something or that it sucks as something other than battery life, depending on which Android phone you get.
I'll agree with that.
But other than that, yeah, it's not a feature problem.
Yeah, and it's your reason you don't get an Android is the same reason I don't get an iPhone.
Right.
You don't want one.
Right.
And you have your... It's almost to the point now where... Your Android, iPhone, or your PC, Mac fights.
Yeah,
it's boiled down to that almost.
That's exactly right. Yeah, for the longest time, PC and Mac, PCs and Macs could do the exact same thing.
Yeah,
it's just people still wanted to fight about it.
Yeah,
and I will still fight to the death. So, have you jailbroken your phone?
I have not rooted my phone.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you got to say root for the Android.
It's the same thing.
So, I know people who have for various reasons, but here is one reason why you might not want to root your phone if you have an Android phone, and that is Google. If you watched any of Google I/O, I believe it was 2 weeks ago, that's Google's big developer conference, they had mentioned they are releasing a couple services. One is Google Music. Another one is, you know, movie rentals, which goes right along with that. And you can get all those on your phone. It goes straight to the cloud. You don't have to do anything. It just works. It looked awesome. However, if your Android phone has been rooted, they block you.
Yeah.
Not cool. No. I mean, you don't have this problem because your phone isn't rooted, but let's say you did root your phone because you wanted a different lock screen. You know, something stupid that you wanted. Would this make you unroot it or put it back? Or would you care about this at all?
I mean, if you root your phone, and if you're like actually rooting your phone for a legitimate reason, you're going to find something else to stream music or stream movies. So, I mean...
So it's kind of like the techie argument. If you know enough to root your phone, you know enough to find some other service.
I would tend to say that, but I think there's some middle ground there where people are rooting their phone. I think in the previous episode you mentioned about you jailbreak your phone... For one thing.
Just for tethering.
And I think that there are people who root their phones, you know, their Android phones, to get rid of some of the bloat. Like, I have Need for Speed that on their Tetris, Madden, and they're not the full games. They're please install. And
right.
I don't want them. And that would be the reason why I would root my phone. I know one of my friends who had a very similar phone to this that was AT&T rooted his phone to put a different ROM on it. Which, I mean, if you're going into that deep, you're going to find something right. else. And
yeah, one of our guests last week, Tim, he did the same thing. He put a new ROM on his phone because of all the bloat. One of my friends that I just ate lunch with today, I looked at his, I forget which phone. It's an Android phone. I forget which one it is, though. I think it might be a Samsung. Not the Fascinate. What other Samsung phones are there that are Android?
There's a bunch.
There's a bunch of them. Yeah. It's not just one or two. Okay, yeah. So he had another Samsung Android phone, and I looked at it and I asked him, "Oh, you listen to Slacker, or oh, you use this app?" And he's like, "No, they just come with it. I can't get rid of it." You know, he didn't root his phone, so he's just stuck with all the trial software that comes with it.
Right.
So yeah, so you haven't rooted your phone. Do you think you're going to use this movie rental service on your phone?
I don't think I'll use the movie rental service. I already downloaded and signed up to get the music thing.
So did I.
Because
haven't gotten my invite yet.
I have not either, because that seems awesome. Like, I already went through and I downloaded Ampachi because I'm running a Linux box, and I did all the steps that they're showing you how to do. I mean, there's other apps that do it, and I think some of them are paid. Some of them may be free. I know Sound Galaxy, or Audio Galaxy is one.
Audio, is that the same Audio Galaxy?
Yes, oh, it is. Man. You made the same face I did when I saw it. I was like, Audio Galaxy, this seems really familiar. And it was...
Audio Galaxy was the best music downloading program ever.
Yes.
Because I would leave the client on my machine at home, and while I was at work, I could log into the website and send songs to the client at home.
Exactly. Now, they took that and they've legitimized it. Like, it's no longer, like, your file downloading. You're using your, you know, your computer if it's, I think it's PC and Mac only. And maybe, I know it's not Linux, and that's the reason I don't have it.
Right.
I was very upset. But there's other tools you can do that copy Google, you know, to do what they're doing.
Right.
But it's more work, and it like you said, it doesn't just work. So if I were to root my phone, I really wouldn't be that upset not having it because I, you know, I myself would find something else.
Right. There are other ways.
Yeah. But in saying that, there's, you know, people who put it on just to remove some of the bloat. It does suck. But I understand where Google's coming from because if, you know, for copyright reasons is what they're claiming. And I don't know if that's coming from Google or if that's coming from, you know, the movie companies, the music companies.
I'm sure it's from them.
Yeah.
But here's the thing I don't understand. You know, all of this stuff is, it's streaming. It's not being saved to the hard drive. If it is being saved to the hard drive, it's just like a couple seconds that get saved to the buffer.
Mm-hmm.
They get played, and then they get overwritten with the next parts that come into the buffer. Like, so even if you do have your phone rooted, I don't know how people... why they're afraid that people are going to be able to steal entire movies. Like, how do you get that data if it's just streaming to your screen and then it's gone? I don't see why they're that afraid.
Stream it and forward to something that will save it. I mean,
I guess if you have your phone rooted, you could do that.
Yeah, there's... but even if you don't have it rooted, there's way... I mean, there's a way around it. They're just...
you can sideload apps to do things.
They're taking... you know, they're taking the stand, and I did air quotes, and I forgot that you can't see.
See, and that's funny, though. They're taking a stand with this, but as far as Google Music is concerned, they're the exact opposite. They're saying, screw you, RIAA. We're not getting licenses. We're just doing it.
Yeah.
It's funny. Ironic.
Ironic is, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I half wonder who uses this service on their phone.
Right.
Like, I don't want movies on my phone. It's too small. I just don't want it.
If I wanted a movie on my phone, I would be downloading it for like a flight.
Right.
If I'm on a flight, I want the movie on my phone. So I'm not really streaming it at all.
Right. So this, and they do offer, you know, if you watch the IO conference, they do offer the, they called it a pin.
Mm-hmm.
You could pin a movie rental and it would save it to your phone for 24 hours.
Yeah.
So I guess that is one reason. I don't know. I guess I'm just against handheld stuff like that.
It's...
I want my big TV.
Yeah. I completely agree. Well, I guess if they're, the Droid X
has the
HDMI out, so you could stream movies that way onto the phone, onto your big TV, but...
yeah, I thought the same thing when I got my iPad 2. I bought the dongle so I can do HDMI out, and the first day I got it, I took my iPad, I started streaming some Revision 3 tech shows, had it plugged into my TV, I'm like, oh, this is awesome, I'm streaming stuff from my iPad, it's going straight to my TV, I can finally watch it on the big screen, and then I thought, I want to use my iPad,
yeah.
It's sitting up there beside my TV plugged in, I can't use my iPad now.
Right.
Like, and if this happens with your phone, like, what if you want to text somebody, what if you want to call somebody, you can't use your phone anymore because you're now streaming to your TV. Like, that's what keeps me away from that experience of multimedia on my phone.
I agree. I mean, I would agree with that.
And our last article kind of goes along with this, you know, talking about the ability to sideload apps onto your phone that don't appear in the Android marketplace. You used to not be able to do that if you were on AT&T's network. However, now AT&T says, okay, we get it. Everybody else allows you. We're going to allow you to do it too. So they're finally removing the restrictions, and they're doing it retroactively on current phones, previous OSs. So every AT&T Android phone, soon, once you get a new OS update, mm-hmm. will be able to sideload apps. Have you sideloaded anything on yours?
A few things.
Okay, so so it is useful. It's something that you...
if it's not on the market, it's, you know, it's kind of surprising, and it's, you know, you've actively looked for something else. But I never realized that you couldn't do this on AT&T. I just kind of assumed it was one of those things that it was an Android feature that you could sideload.
Right.
My question is, and I didn't catch this in the article, could you download them on your computer and load them via USB? I mean, because that's one way around it. You're not doing an OAT, but...
I don't think, though. If I remember right, the checkbox on your phone, because you have the checkbox, too. You know, you can uncheck. You've always had that, and you would have to uncheck it to sideload stuff. And I think the checkbox says something like, allow apps from outside of the marketplace or something like that.
Yes. So unknown sources.
Unknown sources. So I think that would also prevent USB loading because that would be an unknown source. I don't know. I've never done this. I haven't read anything on it. But that's just what I assume from the way that the checkbox says that.
Had I read the article before I came over, I probably would have, you know, done some more research on that. So, I feel like, yeah, that is, it's a really nice thing to have. And I think in the article it said because Amazon started their own marketplace. And yeah. So you can download and buy apps off of them. And that's, I mean, I never realized how nice it was until I realized that if I was on AT&T, I wouldn't have been able to do it.
Right. Yeah, and I didn't realize this until I watched another Revision 3 show where they were talking about the different app stores for Android. There's a lot of app stores for Android.
Yeah.
Like, there's the Android Marketplace, there's the Amazon App Store, and then there are hundreds of other sites that have their own App Store applications and their own quote-unquote stores. I mean, it's ridiculous the amount of places that you can go to get apps.
It's almost, I won't say it's a one-to-one because it's not actually, but it's a pretty close thing that if it's a different device that isn't like a Samsung, a Motorola, or something... My mom bought a tablet from the Home Shopping Network, and you know, I checked it out, and it was decent for what she was going to do with it, and it had its own marketplace that you couldn't load the Android marketplace on. So I mean, and I think that's fairly common with Android devices that they'll load their own, so they're not
right.
And I don't understand the logic behind that. Why it wouldn't just be able to use the Android marketplace along with the other things.
So they actively disable it and make it so you can't access the Android marketplace.
You would have to sideload the Android marketplace.
Wow.
To be able to do that.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
We should call up the Home Shopping Network and be like, come on guys, what's going on?
I don't think, it's not the Home Shopping Network. It's the device.
Whatever company.
It's the device manufacturer, yeah. And I don't know whether it would be like licensing from Google to be able to do that. I think that may tie into it.
Maybe Google's only licensed the certain Samsung right. Motorolas.
Yeah. But like I said, I can't speak to that.
Yeah, we're not mobile experts.
Yeah, no.
So that's the end of the articles that we have. Anything else interesting been going on in this week that you saw in tech news you want to bring up?
PSN's back up from the last episode. Finally.
That's true. I did have that article bookmarked, but I took it out because it's been up and down.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to say it's up and have everybody tell me, no, it's not.
It's conditionally up. The PlayStation Store has been down. I know. There's been spotty being able to log in. It's iffy. You can get your updates. I know that was up before you could actually sign in.
And I actually saw an article a couple hours ago that said it was back down for account maintenance. So you can't, at least as of a couple hours ago, you couldn't sign in. Maybe it's up right now, you know, at 9:30 p.m. on Tuesday evening. Maybe it's up, but around 6 or 7 o'clock, it wasn't.
It's been, I would say conditionally up.
Right.
It's been kind of sketchy.
Enough that you can kind of do things.
Yes.
Like I was able to, sign in and get Portal on my Mac.
Right.
I was able to link my accounts and download Portal, so I was happy. Which, by the way, we need to play as soon as I beat it.
Yes. Yes.
Have you beaten?
I have beaten it. I've actually almost ran through twice.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't played enough, and I'm to the part, I need to throw the third bomb to beat Wheatley.
Mm-hmm.
And, I do that, my previous save brings me right to the part where I throw the third bomb, but I can't figure out how to get the third messed up head to attach to him.
The jump.
Because it's way too high,
yeah.
So, and I can't figure that out in like the 20 seconds I have left.
Yeah.
So I need to, I need to figure this out and just go freaking do it.
I would say restart from the last checkpoint and try it
and
that
get
way.
More time.
I think I ended up doing the same thing. I got to that last one, looked at it, and thought, I have 10 seconds.
Right. Can't do it.
And you can't see me again. I feel weird because it's all involved. Audio, because I'm leaning around the microphone trying to look.
Yeah, he's doing the side peeks.
Yeah, I'm side peeking, you know, and I was doing it when I was playing too, you know, in the, you know.
Like a kindergartner cutting paper with scissors.
Yeah, you're looking and you're trying to, you're just helping your character and it just doesn't work, so.
Yeah, so that's where I'm at. I assume that I'm almost beating it. I'm guessing right. that's close to the end of the game. But yeah, so I need to do that before I, because the two-player game picks up where one player left off, and I don't want to do two-player until I know where one player ends.
I think you're... Oh, I have, having not played this second player, I think at the point where you're going across the light beam, and he says about finding the two other test subjects.
Right.
And I'm sorry if anyone hasn't made it through Portal 1, if I ruined anything for you, but I think that's where it, how it means it picks up where it left off.
Oh, okay. I'm past that then.
I believe
much.
So, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because I do remember Wheatley saying about the test subjects.
Right.
And that rang a bell. I'm like, oh, I saw those in the previews, the two robots.
So I guess I really didn't ruin it.
No, you didn't.
Because you know.
Yeah, there were plenty of trailers that showed two robots doing it. Yeah.
It's kind of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Yeah,
definitely.
There's more to it than just the single player, so.
Yeah, so if last week wasn't enough for all you guys out there, go buy Portal 2.
Yes, go buy Portal 2.
Buy Portal 1 if you haven't played Portal 1, yeah. And then by Portal 2.
Yes.
So that is it for this week's edition of the Slongcast. As usual, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter. My username is Slongcack. Mike, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter. You can send me, you'll have to send me a request. I have my tweets private because...
Ooh, private tweets.
I am Taylinker. Taylinker.
Taylinker. I always say Teh.
Teh.
Yeah, Taylinker.
I think it's a mispronunciation on my part, because if I say Tay to anyone, because it may have been my nickname a while ago, people think it's T-A-Y. And
right.
I'm like, no, it's T-E-H. Like, eh. So, right. Tay.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I never knew how to say it. I knew what you were going for, the misspelling of the.
Yeah.
But I just didn't know how to say it.
Yes, that was what I was going for. So,
so at least I'm not totally an idiot.
Yeah.
And if you want us to talk about an article on the next episode, bookmark it on Delicious as Slongcast 036. Next week will be episode 36. That is everything. Dovidzhenya.